Hey guys, welcome back to the Evan and Caitlin podcast, the podcast where today we are spilling the beans, but no one ever talks about what you're spilling beans onto. We're going to be spilling beans on top of our sponsors.
That's kind of a weird visual.
Hope they like beans. So we put out a question on a lot of our social media platforms to get questions that you guys have about sponsors. And we want to talk about this because it's a huge part of our life. And it seems like not many people share the behind the scenes of the sponsors. And after over 250 sponsor deals, I feel like we're in a pretty good position to like share some of the inside beans.
That's a lot of sponsor deals. It is technically 250 individual things. But that sounds weird because we don't have 250 videos on our main channel. But we'll get into that later.
Yeah. So should we just jump right into the Q&As? Or do you want to give me background on sponsors?
Okay, well, I can give a very, very brief background on sponsors. Basically, most people probably already know this, but just kind of what the basics of a sponsorship deal is in case anyone is coming in more new to this, but it's basically where we partner specifically with a brand and negotiate, typically for us, a 60-second mid-roll where we go through some talking points, you know, ask viewers to go to a certain website or use a certain code. The sponsor pays us to do that segment, and that's kind of the transaction.
Yeah, very, very much simplified down. There's a lot that goes into
it. There's a lot more than that.
We've spent 6 months negotiating a contract before, and we have spent 3 days on all the back and forth of brainstorming ideas, coming up with mock-ups, writing scripts, and...
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because, like, you know... YouTube sponsorships have not been a thing for that many years, if you think about it. And so it's very much Wild West. There are no set rules. Everybody does it different. And
we're all making it up.
Yeah, we're all making it up. We're making it up. The brands are making it up. Everyone's making it up. And everyone has a very different process. So it's kind of a crazy... It's crazy waters to navigate.
Yeah. All right. So the first question comes from our YouTube community, Eric and Send. When did you get your first sponsor and what was it? Was there a certain subscriber or view minimum to be sponsored?
So.
There is no subscriber or minimum view to be sponsored. Really, it's as soon as you can. Like, you know, there are no rules, you know? So if you're like, and the smaller niche you're in, it's almost kind of easier to get a sponsor in that niche.
It also kind of depends on your niche. Like, we came up in the maker community. And it's very common in the maker community for everybody to have sponsors. And typically, not always, but often that's because tool companies will sponsor with this niche community. But then that means the audience is used to seeing sponsorship. So it wasn't... It was just kind of like a given to us that we would do sponsorships because all the people we were watching were doing sponsorships.
Yeah.
So we started very early. Our first sponsorship was...
Well, I think we haven't looked through all of the NDAs we've signed, all of the contracts we've signed. So we're going to kind of generalize companies.
Yeah, we're not going to say brand names. We can because, like, in certain instances, if we're just saying... Like, if we're not giving away specifics, like, we can say that we worked with a brand, but we don't want to tie specific brands...
To a certain price or something like that.
Specific prices and stuff. Yeah, because of NDAs.
Yeah.
So we'll speak about them, like, generally.
Generally, yeah. Just like this. That's not something... It's a thought that I had before this podcast. I didn't really share with Caitlin.
I'm glad you saw it, because I was about to be like, this.
So, let's just say that we were reached out to by a... stock company that sells stock assets, and we had 30,000 subscribers almost 3 years ago. That's crazy to think of. And we were only getting about 13,000 views in the first 30 days of the video then, and we got paid $300.
Yeah. And it's interesting because like 13,000 views is...
Yeah, 13,000
views. Yeah, 13,000 views, 30,000 subs. That's not... We weren't a huge channel when we started doing this. Our thought was that it was easier... Or it would be better to like learn the ropes when we were small. That way if there was any stumbling blocks... Like, there wasn't a ton of money on the line. There wasn't, like, we didn't have a huge audience to mess up in front of if we messed up, you know?
Yeah, and the whole thing that's kind of crazy about YouTube is the same amount of work that went into this video that we got paid $300 for, we are getting paid a lot more for now. It's like the same amount of time went into it, but since we've grown our audience and our reach, and I think... made our videos better, like the same amount of time leads to more profit. And that, and there aren't that many businesses and industries where that's possible.
Yeah, because typically, like, if you're in a, you know, if you work in an office or you work wherever, if you want a raise, you have to, like, switch positions to something where you're taking on more responsibilities.
Yeah.
And I will say we have more responsibilities now, but it's not tied to our income. It's tied to the fact that we've like expanded in a bunch of ways.
Yeah. Another really interesting data point. I looked back at the data on this video that was sponsored for $300. And like you think, okay, you spent like how many days working on that? Like a week and you got paid $300. Like, is that viable at all? But at that time, in the first 30 days of that of publishing that video, the other way most YouTubers get income is from ads that run before your video and pop-ups and stuff. That's called AdSense. That's a YouTube product. And in 30 days, we got paid $20.
And guess how much we've gotten paid on that video in AdSense since then in total?
3 years of that video being live, $171.
So even though that sponsorship was very small because we were a very small channel, it still made more money than the AdSense.
Yeah.
Even over 3 years.
And that's why sponsors are such an important part of YouTubers' income sources, mm-hmm. because it lets them go full time so much earlier. I mean, that's $20 to $300. That ratio is just a lot. And it does get better. Like, as YouTube understands your channel more and knows how to, like, sell ads on your channel and all of that, your cost per 1,000 views that YouTube pays you,
mm-hmm.
It's, like, called your RPM or your CPM or something like that, that goes up. Yeah. So it does get better as you keep on doing
it. Yeah, it does get better.
But...
Yeah, I think that was a long answer to that question.
Yeah.
But I think it also helps kind of give some background.
Yeah. So, and just to further expand on that, when we were at 30,000 subscribers, that was our first sponsor. And then we started sprinkling them in, and they kind of came in waves and batches as like we figured out how to do sponsor deals. But by 80,000 subscribers or so, pretty much every video was sponsored. And that's what allowed us to go full time.
Mm-hmm.
Without that,
oh, yeah. If we were just getting AdSense, no way could we go full time.
No way. No way.
Yeah.
All right. Next question, Caitlin.
Okay. This is from Twitter. Itchy Gamer asks, getting started, how would you recommend someone start networking/contacting sponsors? Is there a website you'd recommend that has links, contacts, resources? I think there's a couple different ways. And we go into this more in our video.
How to start, grow, and monetize a YouTube channel.
Yeah, how to start, grow, and monetize your YouTube channel. But it's a mixture of people contacting us and us contacting companies directly. And these days, we don't really contact them directly just because we have existing relationships and we get sponsorships via those existing relationships. But in the beginning, we would like DM them on Instagram or like try to find a marketing person email on their website and just kind of like cold email.
There was definitely a period where about half of our sponsorships were due to our own efforts and reaching out and all of that. But definitely having a little bit of a portfolio of sponsored deals helps. So in the beginning, like if you are thinking about starting a YouTube channel, just doing a sponsored deal and making it work well for everyone, like, you know, for you, your viewers, and the sponsor, proving that you can do that will help you get more. So the more you do, the more you get,
kind of. Which is, again, why I'm glad we started when we were small, because we were a small risk for the company. And even though we didn't have any past sponsorships, like, it was okay because we were a small risk. If you start doing sponsorships when, you know, you're getting 500,000 views on every single video, that's going to cost a lot more to a company if you ask for a fair price. And that's going to be a bigger risk for them if you don't have any past sponsorships. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And we got one more question from Twitter. Hunter Crumply, how does, like, sponsorships change now versus when we started in terms of them reaching out to you? Yeah, I think the main thing that's changed is more people are reaching out to us and we have to filter out a lot more. Yeah. But also, the relationships that we made when we were first growing have stayed. And those relationships have been so important. I mean, like knowing someone, them trusting you, you trusting them, like having that for the long term is really important. And we have some companies that we've worked with for
like 2 years.
2 years now.
Maybe more. Yeah. Hi, baby. You want to hop up? We're talking about sponsorships. The supervisor
has done a walk-by blessing.
Yes. Thank you for blessing the podcast with your presence.
All right. From Twitter, Bella. What makes you feel most limited by working with sponsors? And conversely, what about sponsorships is the most freeing?
So I think in terms of limited, it's time pressure by committing to doing a video in a certain month. Usually it's a certain month. Some sponsors want it in the first half of the month. Some want it on like a specific week. And so committing to that can be kind of limiting, because then if something comes up or your schedule's super crazy, you can't just say like, oh, instead of doing 3 videos this month, we'll do 2.
Yeah.
You just can't do that.
A behind the scenes peek at the curtain, you know, we book far out just for our own planning purposes. So like our schedule is locked. Like we have a certain number of videos that we need to make and we have committed to that and we want to make them all winners. And if we go through live things or whatever, we can't adjust that schedule that easily.
Yeah.
And we've never, on our end, we have never pulled out from any sponsors, right?
I mean, we've pulled out during preliminary talks.
Yeah. But once like a contract is signed.
Yeah. Like
I don't think anything has ever thrown that off on our end. Things have gone wrong.
Like disagreements on both ends, but we've never just been like, hey guys, we're out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's because we want to establish those long-term relationships. We want to establish trust.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like when you're with this big company with redundancy in it, you know, like committing to a schedule, getting that locked in, that makes sense. That's really good. And it all works because, like, if you need to step away for a little bit, someone can kind of step in.
You're not talking about sponsorships, though. You're just talking about working. If you are working at a big company in general, there is redundancy.
Yeah, but, like, you know, I know a lot of YouTubers try not to schedule that far out because they don't know what videos they're doing and they don't know, like, what their schedule is going to be. Mm-hmm. We do. And that kind of takes us to a positive is, like, the thing that's freeing about sponsorships is we know that we have income for the next certain number of months that we have booked.
Mm-hmm.
Because with AdSense going up and down, and, you know, there have been multiple waves of demonetization that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
and, like, you know, one time, like, Patreon had a controversy and people pulled out of Patreon. Like, no single income source that is not from sponsors is as guaranteed as sponsors. Because at the same time, we've never backed out from a deal that like was really going. I don't think we've ever had a sponsorship that has not paid us.
Oh, well, they've always paid us. We did have one back out in the 11th hour after the video was done and about
story.
To go live.
Oh my gosh, that was a nightmare. Our biggest sponsor ever.
Our biggest one.
A big ambitious project that took like, it took place over a month. And yeah, they pulled out last minute because of third, like, you know, nothing in our control, all because there were like 4 companies involved, us, an agency, and a company.
Yeah.
And so many lawyers. And in the end.
Just a lot lost in communication.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is the company didn't really know what they wanted. And we kind of did what they asked. And then they're like, I don't know if that's what we wanted.
Yeah. And then they were like, bye.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but that's pretty rare.
That's that pretty happens. Rare. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that kind of covers some of the, like, the main pros and cons.
I mean, like, the other limiting thing is it's just how long it takes to do sponsored deals sometimes.
And I think that's one reason we often will do recurring. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll work with the same companies over and over again because it's a lot faster.
Yeah.
You know, every time you are doing something with a whole new brand or a whole new agency, there's so much more onboarding and you don't really know exactly what they're expecting and they don't really know what to expect from you. And there's so many more phone calls and Zoom meetings.
More contracts necessary. And
more
stuff.
More contracts, you know.
Yeah. So generally, I can walk through it, like, the process, just really high level, really quick. So you establish a relationship with a company, you reach out or they reach out. Usually you kind of run down through a brief, you like kind of agree on a general price and then a contract is sent and then you negotiate that contract. And then, you know, the video pitches go back and forth and then we write a script or whatever. Sometimes we send it to them. Sometimes we don't. It depends on all the agreements. And then, sometimes they need to review it beforehand. Most of the times they do.
They always need to review it.
Yeah. We have to send them either just the ad or the whole video, depending on the contract and the price and everything. And then they need to approve it before we go live. And one of the things that's been so stressful for us is many times, like, you guys might notice that, like, we publish a little bit late on Friday. It's because at 10 a.m. on Friday, we've gotten approval to go live, and then we go live. But, like, Friday morning, we wake up, and we don't even know if our video is approved to be published. That's happened at least 4, 5, 6
But times. I will say the majority of the time, it's a much simpler process because it's more like we've established a 6-month, once a month deal with a brand and we don't have to send them a script beforehand. They don't care what the project is at all. We send them the ad to review a couple days before it goes live and we usually hear within 24 hours that we're good to go with no changes.
Yeah, those are our favorite sponsors.
And, like, that's... Again, that's why you see us working with the same companies over and over again sometimes.
I think we got that question from somewhere in here.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like, that is a question from later.
That's why we like these companies. I think the biggest reason why we can do that with some companies is because they trust us.
Yeah.
They know that we're going to, like, do our best to make a funny ad that people will want to watch and that hits the points that they want. And that's what's so good about forming those long-term relationships.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Here's a question about some legal stuff. So from Kindred Fiori, how did you deal with the legal part? You had to ask a lawyer first for tips and red flags you had to be aware about. So typically we don't involve a lawyer. We've gotten pretty dang good at reviewing contracts by this point, and typically there's a lot of the same stuff and we kind of know the red flags to look out for. And again, I'm glad we started when there wasn't that much on the line.
Yeah.
Because now when we're dealing with higher amounts than we were back then, we are more confident in reviewing contracts or, like, asking for changes and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost everything is up to negotiation. And if it isn't, then that might be a sign of something, you know? But yeah, I think I did go talk to a lawyer once, about something. I think I did, like, a free consult and I got, like, no value out of it.
Oh, I think it was, like, we were thinking about doing, because some companies have contracts, but then some smaller companies, it's just, like, an email. And so we were like, oh, should we make our own contract
for these other companies? Yeah.
Just kind of something very generic, but so we can still have something signed. And I think that's why you went to the lawyer, just to be like, how do I draft this?
Mm. Yeah, I forget.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. but yeah, we don't have an agent that represents us. We do work with agencies that represent brands, but we don't have, like, our agent we call up, or we also don't have a manager that we call up. We really don't have any
company. Yeah, it's
we really don't have any interest in that at all.
We like being in full control, even though that's a lot for us to handle.
But we've been doing it for so long now that, like, you know, I can see the value in it if, like, you blow up all of a sudden and you're like, I don't know how to do any of this stuff. I'm, like, leaving opportunities on the table. I need help. But, like, we've been doing it for so long. It's, you know, we already know how to do everything. We already have relationships established. Yeah.
All right, real quick question that we can address from YouTube, Tech by Matt. How is your business set up? Partnership, LLC, S-Corp, is financial independence or early retirement something you guys are interested in striving towards?
Yeah, so we are...
In transition?
Well, no, I think we're officially transitioned to an S-Corp.
S-Corp, yeah. Caitlin started an LLC for herself a while ago. I joined in, and then we transitioned to an S-Corp. So, like, you know... That's where we're at. Very interesting.
But I think you should establish an official business.
You need to have an official business.
It's not hard to set up an LLC. I did it, didn't really know anything about it, and I was able to do it. I was 20, 21 when I did it.
And in terms of financial independence, early retirement, that is something that we do want to strive towards, but we're just going to keep on making YouTube videos.
Yeah, it's we want to strive towards it for a we don't have to worry about things so much, but not from a we don't want to work anymore
standpoint. It's more like we're going to be more immune to seeing that our video is performing 10 out of 10 of the last,
And maybe we won't feel like we have to have a sponsor on every video eventually.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, but it is kind of and I think that I'm going to kind of maybe jump ahead here a little bit, but I think that someone asked, from Twitter, Bella, was there ever any time that you guys worried you wouldn't be able to create a sustainable income out of YouTube making, streaming? I'm curious about how any rough hatches and how you got through them. So before we started, we saved up enough money because we are planners and, you know, worriers to a certain degree. And we had saved up enough money so that we could, you know, make a go at this and have some cash reserves to pull from if we needed to. We ended up doing okay. It didn't drop too much. And then we grew that. But there were some worries that we were going to make it in the beginning. And I think that even for maybe 2 years, even after we had gotten successful, even after we had gone over 100,000 subscribers and every video was sponsored, we did worry, how long is this YouTube channel going to last? How long are people still going to be interested in our channel, and is the YouTube bubble gonna pop or what have you, because it's still such a new industry. I mean, we've been doing this for 3 years, which seems short for a career, but also it's the whole career, people have probably been doing YouTube for 10 years, but it really started taking off as a financially viable option for many people, I'd say only 5 or 6 years ago.
Something like that. I mean, I feel like that's the point where it was more common knowledge that you could make a career out of it. I think people were doing it before that. It just wasn't as common.
Yeah, but I think that the thing that made us feel more confident is being able to diversify from one channel into the gaming channel and then into other platforms like TikTok and what have you. And knowing that even if one platform goes away, our community will still have our backs and will kind of support us wherever we kind of need to go to a certain degree, and then we can rebuild their worst case scenarios.
That's kind of getting off topic though. I think to bring it back to sponsors. Again, we have more control over our future when we're working with sponsors. We feel because we can lock things in and know at least a few months ahead of time what's coming down the pipe.
Yeah. Speaking of, being in control of setting up sponsors, or maybe good transition, we got a few questions about what percent of sponsors do we turn down and how do we do it and everything. So from the YouTube community, Catherine Neal asks, how can you tell which sponsors are real and which are fake when you are contacted by email? I've heard some other YouTubers mention that they get a lot of spam. Do you have an agent that you work with, or how does that contact part at all work in general?
So, I mean, I think the easiest way to tell when things are fake are just either when they're super, super generic or...
Dear Evan and Caitlin with no spaces, yeah. I'm really interested in your content. I think that you have a beautiful family, and I think your content is beautiful.
Yeah, we got one that was I love your family. It's just so beautiful. And we're are you talking about our cat? She is beautiful.
you can really tell when it's generic.
Or sometimes it's like a formatted HTML-based email where it's like, obviously someone writing an email individually to creators is not going to like format it like that.
Or like, click here on this survey to submit your interest in this sponsorship or something like that. It's like, you can tell just by glancing at them. And I think that like, some people go with management companies to offload like all of that contact email that you get. Mm-hmm. But honestly, like sorting through the spammy stuff takes like minutes each morning. Even though it's a lot, I'm like spam, 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 spam.
Yeah. And there's certain things that like, you know, they may or may not be actual spam, but we're just going to say no to. Like if someone wants us to review their product, it's mm-hmm. a no.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like there's just certain, like we don't do reviews.
And honestly, like I feel weird saying this, but like as we've grown as a channel, I can kind of tell if a company might have the budget,
yeah,
you know, for a sponsorship right off the bat, or like if they're experienced with sponsorships. In general, like if we've seen a brand do lots of brand deals all over the place, we're honestly more likely to work with them because they know how
to work with YouTubers. Works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we know it's going to be an easier, less stressful
yeah,
burden upon us.
We kind of see red flags when it like we can tell that they are new to this space, because that means like we're going to have to hold their hand and we're going to have to try extra hard to convince them to pay us our rate, or like they're going to want more control than we normally give.
Yeah.
Over like editorial stuff, you know?
So yeah, we've gotten an email from, or a question from YouTube Aid 23. What's the shadiest email you receive from a company? I feel like I should be saving some of those, and like we read some out on a podcast at some point, because it is pretty funny. But yeah, we have gotten emails from all sorts of companies, like, you know, products that we might not agree with, products that we're not comfortable advertising, products that, you know, yeah, every variety. So we probably turned down, I don't know, 90% of the emails that we get.
I mean, yeah, if you're counting like the spam ones.
If we're counting the spam ones. Okay, if we're counting the spam ones, that's 90. But like if you filter out all of the spam ones, even like the deals that might be legit, that are for more serious amounts of money and more serious companies, probably like 50%.
Yeah.
50%. And I think that's a tough thing that we've struggled with too. It's like we could make more money just by working more. I mean, that's something that I think maybe all YouTubers struggle with. Not even just with sponsors.
It's like you're in control of your own knob. You can turn it up or you can turn it down. And we've been trying to turn it down little by little. Like earlier this year, we were only publishing a video every other week, and that was great. But we've since kind of turned up the knob.
We've done multiple where we do four in a row.
Yeah, and
didn't we do five in a row a little bit ago?
Yeah, we did five. Five. Are we still in the five in a row chunk?
I don't know.
I mean, like, it's one of those things that like we pay attention to a lot more than anyone else probably notices. Anyways, yeah, that it can be hard to say no, because you're like, well, there's an extra Friday in this month.
Well, but also it's like, this company might be cool. What if we say no, will they ever come to us again? And sometimes if someone comes to you, you say no, they may never come to you again.
Honestly, you know? That's probably been the thing that has made us say yes when we felt like we maybe would struggle to squeeze them in. Like, it's more about establishing that relationship for the long term, not about that specific deal. It's like, oh, this agency works with some really cool brands, or like, this brand is so cool, like, we actually legit use this brand, and like, we are fans of this brand long before the sponsorship. Mm-hmm. This is a perfect fit, but, you know, we don't have time to
squeeze this in. Our schedule's full, you know? Yeah. And we try to like schedule them in. Yeah. But also it's like sometimes some companies have a budget for a quarter or a month or what have you. And they may not know if they have budget in the future and, mm-hmm. and what have you. So sometimes it is like, here's your chance. Do you take it or leave it?
Yeah. Or sometimes someone will come expressing interest and you might not have anything in your schedule for the next 2 months, but then negotiations take 6 months. And you're like, well, glad I said yes back then because it's finally coming to fruition.
Yeah.
Much later.
So. Yeah. And so yeah, I think the biggest reason why we turn sponsors down is because we have too many deals coming our way, which is a very lucky position mm-hmm. to be in. I feel very lucky and blessed to be in that place. But also, I mean, like, a strong criteria is how good of a fit it is for us. How easily can we recommend it? You know, if it's there's a ton of things we've turned down for various reasons, but if it's not something we feel comfortable promoting, or if it's not a product that we believe in, or if it's something that we're like, that's another reason why, like, sometimes we'll turn down a deal that's for more money for something that we feel that we can recommend more.
But you know, another thing that happens, I think that's kind of like an obvious thing that people would expect. You know, hopefully people expect you to turn down deals for products that you're not comfortable with. But I think a slightly more behind the scenes reason that we very frequently will turn down deals is they want too much editorial input.
Yes.
Sometimes just on the ad, but sometimes on the whole video. You know, if someone wants an integration that's more than like a minute to a minute and a half, that's a no. Like we're not going to do that. If someone is not cool with us being humorous in the ad, that's a no. If someone wants to dictate an entire video or have their hands too much in the project, that's a no. And we've had sponsors where we worked with them and they were like pretty hands off in the beginning, and then they got more and more hands in the pot and we stopped renewing with them.
Yeah.
Even if we liked the product.
Yeah.
Because we just don't want that level of editorial input. Like when they're giving us input on the aesthetics of our project and they want us to change the aesthetics of the project because they like a different aesthetic more. No, that has nothing to do with your sponsorship, you know?
We value our freedom the most.
Yeah.
And also it's like not just like our freedom to create projects that we enjoy the most, but also like, you know, if you get locked in to do a specific project on a specific day, that's the most stressful.
Yeah.
What if that takes longer or something is delayed or whatever? Like if the sponsor isn't tied to a specific concept, oftentimes we'll swap concepts around because
we just did a switcheroo for later this month.
Yeah, like one thing that is done earlier than the other, or like something is delayed, or we need to redo mm-hmm. something. I mean, having the freedom to swap sponsors around from video to video is huge.
So like 90% of our sponsors, they don't care what video they're on. They don't need to hear the concept beforehand. They just trust that we're going to do something generally ad-friendly.
That's
that
because we have formed those relationships ways.
Yeah. No, but usually those brands started out that way too.
Yeah.
And it just happens to be the brands that you see working with a lot of YouTubers. And I think it's just like they trust, like they see the value in just letting the YouTuber make a video that they think will work well on their channel.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, so even though they were new to us, it's like they saw that our videos performed well, or they thought we would be a good fit or whatever, and they just kind of trusted us.
So from the YouTube community, Paige Hammer, last question on like, you know, turning down sponsors or saying yes to sponsors. Have you ever regretted any sponsors you said yes to?
I think there have been sponsors that ended up, so just like the example I said where a sponsor ended up becoming needier and needier and wanting more and more input. I don't necessarily regret saying yes to them, but I felt like we kind of pulled out at the right time. So that's kind of a different thing. Yeah. I think the only one that I do regret is the one that pulled out at the last minute.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there should have been like knowing what we know now, we should have asked more questions like, has this brand ever worked with influencers before? Like, and we were getting red flags right off the bat. Like in the pitch, it says like, don't be too humorous, don't be too silly. And we're like, we're humorous and silly.
Are you okay with that?
And then they sent back like, you guys were too like.
Well, and they said yes, we're okay with that. And then at the end, once everything was done, they were like, this is too frivolous.
Frivolous! Have you watched our videos?
Yeah.
We are kind of frivolous.
I would say that's the only one I regret. And it's like, I'm still very happy with the video. I'm so glad we did the project. Yes. But it would have been a much, like, we were so stressed. We were ordering, we had to order so much equipment. We spent so much money.
We wasted so much money.
We wasted so much additional money just because, like, we were sleepless nights. We were ordering everything one day shipping, and we had to order, like, multiple options, and a lot of the stuff we can't return. We had to do rushed rentals.
We did all this rush. We were ready, and then we had to delay the publishing of the video like 2 or 3 weeks.
So that they could review. So it was a huge rush to get it done on time, which made it a lot more stressful than it had to be. And then there was like this huge wait during the review period.
I think we told our Patreons more.
Patreons know more.
I think we did an after show on that or something like that. Or a mini vlog.
We did
vlog.
Like a mini vlog.
Mini vlog. Oh.
But I would say that's the only one that I regret. But at the same time, like, we learned a lot, and we have applied that knowledge to... Oh, hello. Do you want to join?
Yeah.
We have applied that knowledge to future sponsorships and, like, learned things to
But in
ask.
Terms of, like... any sponsors that we like, we're like, oh, we shouldn't have recommended that. No, no. We do all that pre-thought beforehand.
Yeah.
And we have, we're lucky enough to like have enough coming our way that we like can say no to, well, in any ways, if we didn't feel good about it, we just wouldn't have no sponsor.
Yeah. I mean, we've had videos where like we sponsored ourselves. I think there's only been like 2 this year where we're like, this is brought to you by our patrons. This is brought to you by Evan and Caitlin merch.
Yeah. ShopEvanCaitlin.com. I think that covers that topic. Okay, we have some questions about logistics from the YouTube community. Naomi Firstner, what's the difference between sponsoring a video and sponsoring a portion of a video? Why do you sometimes put tapes over brands in videos like the Rainbow Bench, and other times you don't? Do you always try the product you're sponsoring beforehand?
So I pulled...
That's a lot of questions. Wow.
Yeah. So, well, I pulled this because, especially the first 2 questions, there was some... like comments under this with people kind of guessing and speculating. And so I thought it'd be an interesting one to clear up because most people actually in the comments didn't get it right.
Okay, so sponsoring a video and sponsoring a portion of a video.
Okay, so most brands we work with don't differentiate. Like sponsoring a video, it's just sponsoring a video. Like it's technically they're getting a bracketed 60-second segment, and they don't really care about the rest, so it's kind of like them sponsoring a video, but they don't really care about the they don't care about like the words we use to describe that sponsorship. They just call it sponsoring a video. Some of the bigger brands that have bigger, I'm assuming,
lawyer
legal teams and things like that are very particular about if they are sponsoring the entire video or just a portion of it. So if you hear us say, like in our recent video, you know, the brand sponsors this portion of the video, that means they're not like, they don't have like a claim on the rest of it. So if, you know.
It makes it like less like
it's worries less of a risk for them.
Yeah, less worries of third party IP, less worries about like things showing up in the video or things that we do or what have you, you know. Because I think that like we said, that since this is the Wild Wild West, and since these videos are up forever, kind of linking us to these brands, and since the FTC hasn't really gotten their act together when it comes to YouTube.
And rules like, are still often changing.
Rules are still often changing. Oftentimes, like, certain brands will want to be extra...
Play it extra safe.
Play it extra safe. So if we say it one way or another, we're kind of just following the lead of the sponsor who's sponsoring us.
Yeah.
And we're kind of like, you know... acclimating to them. And I think that like, you know, I think that we have done everything as above the board as possible and, you know, following all of the latest guidelines, but it is changing. And some people try to like future proof things in certain ways, but it's all guesses.
Yeah. And that's the same reason why there's often tape over our brands because, and it's not because like a brand is like, I'm paying for this sponsorship. I don't want you showing off this other brand. No, no. It's actually because that logo is IP, third-party IP that belongs to a different company.
Yeah.
And to play it safe legally, the brand paying us doesn't want to be showing third-party IP in the same way they don't want us to show, like, a SpongeBob time card saying 12 seconds later.
Well, you know? Like, you know, it's the same reason why, like, in TV shows, you might notice that there's never an Apple logo on a laptop.
Yeah.
You'll notice that everything is genericized. You'll notice that, like, so many things are covered. And people wear t-shirts that are unbranded or, like, made up for that TV show or whatever.
We have to wear unbranded t-shirts. If it's not our own, we can wear our own t-shirts because those designs belong to us.
But I'm just wearing, a blue t-shirt.
But we couldn't wear a shirt with, a Nike logo on it. And some people have noticed that in some videos I've had to blur the Adidas logo on my pink slides.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's third-party IP and legally the brand paying us wants to play it safe.
Yeah.
And then usually we just end up leaving the tape because, like, there's no point in taking it all off and then having to put it all on again the next time a brand wants to play it safe. And some brands, again, everyone has, like, a different level of how safe they want to play it. Some brands are a little bit more lax about it, but...
Sometimes we have had a brand sponsor the whole video where, like, we intro it as sponsored, we do the sponsored ad, and then at the end we thank them again. That's a fully sponsored video in the mind of the people who sponsored it. So for that entire video, we needed to be super strict about third-party IP because, like, then, anyone can sue anyone for anything at any time, but it's more likely that, like, if... brand A is getting, monetary benefit from us using another brand's product, then, like, I don't know. What legal things might happen.
Yeah.
And then, do you always try the products you're sponsoring beforehand? Often we do. I'll download or install it, or we'll buy it ourselves or what have you.
They won't always send it to you beforehand. Yeah. Sometimes we have to buy it ourselves just to, like, play it safe.
Yeah. And oftentimes, like, I think there's one brand where we said, like, okay, if you send it to us and we don't like it, are you okay with us pulling out? And they said, okay.
Yeah.
And then they sent it to us. Yeah. Cause, like, we're like, can we get it beforehand? And they're like, no. They only send it to you if you're doing the brand deal. And then so that we're like, okay, but if we don't like it, we're going to back up and we want to make sure you understand that and you're okay with it.
Yeah.
And then they're like, understandable.
Yeah.
And then we liked it and we're still using it, thankfully.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't
try something.
We're always prepared we have a way to, that if we don't like it,
we'll build that in. Yeah.
I don't think that there's any product that we've tried and we haven't enjoyed. I'm trying to remember.
There are
multiple things where, like, they'll reach out to us, we'll research it, look at the Google reviews, look at the Trusted Pilot,
look at your reviews, aren't they great online?
Guru and stuff like that, and we're like, polite excuse to say no, because we want to be polite and business-like, but also no.
Yeah, so that has happened, but I don't think we've ever gotten to the point where they sent it to us or we signed a contract and then we didn't like it. I think anything like that we've figured out beforehand.
Or, like, honestly, there's one product that they reached out to us and it got okay reviews, but, like, there were just so many better or just the same ones for, like, half the price or less.
Yeah. And we're like, we can't.
I can't recommend that.
Even that was actually something we were in the market for. Yeah. But that's why you knew about all the other options.
And then I bought the cheaper one.
So funny.
But yeah. So we put a lot of, so much time goes into the behind the scenes stuff, guys. I feel like explaining it all would sound like complaining, but just know that
there's a lot of time.
There's a lot, and we try to make them the best we can.
Speaking of which, a question from Laura Williams. Do your sponsors review your ads before you can put them in a video? If so, what is the review process like? So every sponsor wants to review at least the ad portion.
Have we talked about product placement yet?
No, we haven't, but we'll get to that. Well, we can talk about that after this.
Yeah.
Sponsors always want to review, like, the 60-second segment at least, which totally makes sense. We're totally fine with that. They want to, they usually have a certain amount of talking points that they're cool with us fitting in a way that we want to fit in that feels natural. And that's typically how it is. Usually there's, like, a handful of talking points and a call to action at the end. we try to fit it into like a skit or do something funny, and then we send it to them and they make sure like we hit the points that they want us to hit.
And honestly,
that's typically
how
it works.
I think the most changes we've gotten back, and the thing that they're honestly looking most for, is do we say something false? Like, do we overpromise, or do we like
yeah,
you know, are we unintentionally misleading?
Most of the brands that we work with like are kind of looking for red flags like that. Mm-hmm. And they're totally cool with us embellishing those talking points with funniness or skits or silliness, however we want to do. And they're just like, okay, did they say the right percent off at the end? Because we switched it and I just want to make sure that they mm-hmm. got the right one. Or like, did they have the text overlay? Okay, check.
Or like, you know, we say like, you know, oftentimes we'll like, with more strict brands, we'll send them what we're generally going to say. And they're like, actually, can you change this word to this word? Because like, that's more accurate in yeah. a way or something like that. I mean, honestly, most brand deals we do, they're just like trying to help us say accurate and mm-hmm. correct things. I don't think we've ever gotten back saying, that sounds dumb or that's too silly or something like that.
We haven't, but we also have gotten to the point where like if a brand reaches out, we'll say like, this is the style we do ads in. See some examples here. We often use skits or humor. Is that cool? And so typically these days we don't get to the point of actually sending them anything mm-hmm. if they're not cool with that. But yeah, some brands do require to see like a script for the ad beforehand, or some where we're just getting red flags that they're going to be stricter or needier. We'll write out a script for the ad and send it to them so we don't waste time filming it, editing it, and then they want us to change a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and it really is in both of like, you know, when we can get to like that really nice place with a brand, mm-hmm. that's better for everyone. Less yeah. time on them, mm-hmm. less time on us,
yeah.
faster, back and forth, everything. There's less overhead needed on their end, less time needed on our end. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where everyone wants to get. But like, I think like at the beginning, sometimes brands are like, ah.
Which makes sense. I mean, yeah. we're new to them. And oftentimes they do also want to review the video too.
More recently.
Yeah. Like, I think because of... You know, in the past 6 months, a lot has happened in the world.
A lot has
happened.
And
they want to make sure that, like...
We're being sensitive.
You know, like, we're not saying anything insanely controversial. And so they're looking for that kind of stuff.
Because they don't want to be associated with, like, someone who, like, goes off the rails, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Which makes sense. We've, you know... So some companies previously didn't care about reviewing the video at all. And in the past like 6 months, they do want to see it. None of those more chill companies that didn't even like care before have ever had any changes
yeah.
in the video. They just want to like see it. Now, some of the bigger companies do review the whole video and sometimes will have specific changes, but usually it's only like FTC related stuff like, on your Patreon shout out at the end, instead of having the Patreon logo on there, can you like say thank you to our patrons?
You know, things like that
where it's like, it's not about like creative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, oh, this might be like a slight red flag for legal or whatever.
Yeah.
And
what's that review process like? It depends on the sponsor again. Sometimes it's one day, two day, three day. But, like, sometimes it's 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's usually either super chill and we hear back within 24 hours with no changes, or it's, like, a huge two-week process where we go through many, many revisions.
And phone calls.
Like, video huge calls. Word docs, you know, yeah. Video
Decks,
calls.
Decks, slides.
That's a lot more rare.
Yeah. Okay, so one thing, I'm not sure if we've gotten any questions. Did we get any questions about product placement?
No, but that ties back to the thing we said at the beginning about how we've done 250 sponsorship deals. So some of the sponsorships we do, and we used to do them a lot more frequently, but we still do now, are product placements. And there's a lot less information about how to properly do that on YouTube. You know, we try to follow the best practices that we can. And we've recently even started like over communicating rather than under communicating,
yeah.
but like a product placement is where a brand is paying you to use their product, but you're not endorsing it verbally or doing talking points or giving like a call to action. So like an example of that is like the resin company we work with.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've been working with them for a bit now, a long, pretty long time. And we make sure to show the logo when we use them, and we include a link and say thank you for sponsoring.
And sometimes it's like exclusivity to a certain degree. Yeah, like, and like it's set up in so many different ways. Yeah, you know?
It's that's even like more Wild West because I feel like it's less common.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's nice because like we don't have to do talking points, you know, we can give a link, you know, say thank you to our sponsor in text. It's a lot less invasive, and we can layer it into other videos because, you know, a lot of sponsors don't want you doing like 2 60-second mid-rolls.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want you to like talk about this company and another company.
Some channels do that. I've seen some channels do like an ad at the beginning and an ad at the end.
Yeah. And I mean, like if it's something that like their audience is cool with, then, you know, that's totally fine. For us, it's easier just to limit it to 1 60-second mid-roll per video.
Yeah, that's enough work.
But we do have one or two companies that, like, we'll use their products as, like, a product placement.
Yeah, and honestly, one of the reasons why we've stopped doing that as much is because, like, again, we want the freedom. And the brands that we still do that with are really flexible, and they understand that like dates might move around or what have you, and they're cool with that. The brands that weren't cool with that, we just stopped doing it.
Yeah, so there's only like two brands that we still do that with on a like,
you know. And if we wanted to, we probably could reach out to more brands, establish those relationships, you know, monetize more. But
I mean, the product placements, it's a small fraction of the cost of a normal sponsorship, which makes sense because like we're not talking about it, we're not doing any talking points,
and the reason
it's not really worth it to like establish new relationships. It's just there's a couple companies that we already have existing relationships with.
Yeah So let's see, I think we addressed a lot of the things, a lot of questions under the logistics. So let's maybe move to creative control.
Yeah, from Naomi Furster. Has a sponsor ever refused one of your ideas with something like feelyourbutt.com, for example? So I don't think we've ever had a sponsor just like flat out refuse a skit idea.
I think this is where the editorial and creative control comes in. We have had companies refuse our project ideas.
Yes.
And they're saying like, oh no, that's too whatever. And usually we stop working with them.
Yeah, that's true though.
It's true though. But yeah, I don't think that anyone has ever said like, I don't like that ad.
Again, typically like we've vetted this company the best we can and made sure they're cool with us being silly. They know our style before we get to the point of filming an ad for them.
Yeah.
A related question from Mason Masters is, do your sponsors say, hey, it'd be funny if you dressed up as aliens and talk about futuristic lasers? Or are you guys just super creative?
We're just super weird.
So that's referring to the alien characters we have used in several ads. Space dust are us.
Oh.
No, that's just us. We like coming up with funny characters. Because I think it gives you a way to like explain the talking points in an ad, but as a character, which makes it more funny inherently. Yeah.
Every weird thing in an ad has just been us. We have no excuses.
I like dressed up as Carol Baskin in an ad, and we were like, hope they're cool with this.
Well, I think one time we pretended like we were parachuting out of an airplane, and we were like falling through the sky. That was fun to film.
That was really fun. We did a lot of green screen stuff.
Yeah, no, but I don't think that any company has ever come to us with creative direction on the ad itself.
No.
Never. They're just like, make sure to say these words generally, but also in your own words.
Yeah.
And also, like, we've never really, like, we try to make the words our own every single time. And I don't think we've ever had a company saying, actually, no, stick with the script exactly how it is.
And I mean, it's more benefit to them if it sounds natural coming from you. The only thing that is often like strict is like the specific offer at the end.
Yeah.
Because it might be like if you say, go to URL for 50% off your entire order. And they're like, oh, actually, it's not. It's you have to also do the code. So like you have to say, go to URL and use this code to get 50% off your entire order.
But they're just trying to help on accuracy.
I mean, and that's just like. We just did it wrong. You know what I mean? That's the only thing they've ever been specific about.
Yeah.
So that kind of answers a couple of the questions.
So, Lay Paquette, Leighton Paquette asks, what's the average length of time you're expected to hype the brand? And do they provide video footage for the spot? Or do you have to capture your own?
We say no if they want us to talk for over like a minute. Or we've sometimes had people we'll say like press to a minute
3 minutes.
We've had people ask like, for 5 minutes. And I'm like, hello?
Are you crazy?
Do you want people to click away? So no. Like our average is 60 seconds. Sometimes it's a smidge more. Sometimes it's a smidge less.
And oftentimes they don't give a time. They're just like saying, hit these talking points. And we make sure that we can get a funny thing and the talking points within a reasonable amount of time, which is like 30 to 60 seconds.
Yeah. And the only times that they provide video footage are
If
there is like a specific UI they want to show, and, you know, then it's just like easier for them to give us the footage of like, click sign up here and here are the three plans we offer. You know, it's like we would capture that video footage, or which like, would be a pain, or they can send it to us, which is much easier. And it's typically a very small part of the ad. You know, like it's not like the whole ad is that UI. It's just that like they want to show a very specific like place to click when you are saying how it works. And it's just easier if they send it to us.
Yeah. We got a question from Beanie B. Is there anything that you like? Are there any restrictions that you have to follow? Like you can't say anything bad about the product. There's an influencer once who got a sponsorship, but just talked about how terrible the product was. But the sponsor didn't mind since people thought it was hilarious and it actually got more attention than expected.
I think like I wouldn't feel comfortable doing a sponsorship and then just talking about how bad it was. I would rather just not do the sponsorship because it would feel weird to take a company's money and then just talk crap about them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't think that. I mean, we read through them, and there are some things like, you know, we can't sue each other and, you know, legal protections and all sorts of things like that. But I think that, you know, we're supposed to generally present a product and give our honest opinion. And if we didn't like it, we would just say no from the beginning.
It's also different because, like, a sponsorship is different than a review.
Yeah.
And I think in a review process, there's more of giving your own thoughts where, like, it might be a mixture of, like, I really like this, but I didn't like this part. And there's just more time and for you to give your thoughts on various aspects of a product. Whereas, like, we're going through a 60-second thing, and it's more about, like, telling you what the product is.
Yeah, it's more telling what the product is.
And less time spent on, like, our feelings about it, like everything is just very condensed.
Yeah. And I'm going to try to give a very generic example. Like, let's say you're reviewing a cardboard box.
Wow.
I tried to go very generic. But like, if we were promoting like this specific cardboard box brand, we'd just say like, hey, you can get your cardboard boxes here. Here are the good things that they feel differentiate them from the competition. A cardboard box review channel would be like, ooh, this cardboard box is great. It packs down well, but it's dual walled and that's good. This one has waterproofing on it and this one doesn't, or whatever. You know, it's like in a review, you can go into the pluses and minuses of this versus that. Whereas like in most sponsors, you just say like, here's the thing that's special or unique about this brand. So it's like if you're being paid to review something, I think that'd be really tricky.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would work.
That's one reason we say no to reviews. I mean, also, I just don't want to do it.
I just don't want to do it. Yeah. I think that I kind of went a little extra there answering more than they asked. Okay. So this is something that we get asked a lot. What percentage of our income is from what source? And what percent? Oh, so it's.
Are you struggling with words? Here, yeah. I'll take over. Okay. Maya asks, what percentage of your income is from sponsorship? You can be as general or as specific as you want.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because we actually, in an earlier podcast, over a year ago, from June of 2019, we talked about this and we looked up our percentages today and they have changed.
Yeah. So, back in the day when we were smaller, 60% of our income came from sponsors, 15 from Patreon, 15 from AdSense, 6 from affiliate, and 6 from merch.
When you say affiliate, you mean affiliate links.
Affiliate
like
links.
Like when we link to tools.
Tools and what have you.
Stuff.
And I think that it's changed a lot in very interesting ways. And we'll kind of break down maybe why and how and stuff.
And so, again, those first numbers were from June of 2019, which at the point of recording this is like a year and a couple months ago.
Yeah. So, and also in that time, we've started gaming, which has added a whole another chunk. So that's why some of these have gone down. But now sponsors are 47%.
So from 60 to 47.
Patreon is 10.
So from 15 to 10.
AdSense, which is like, you know, YouTube paying us basically for the ads it play, is at 26.5.
And from 15%.
Yeah.
And of that, 22%, or like 22 of that 26.5 is from our main channel, and 4.5 of that 26.5 are from our gaming channel.
Our two gaming channels.
Yeah, from the two gaming channels combined. So it's mostly the main channel.
Yeah. And the whole brand new income source is Twitch at 9%.
Mm-hmm.
Affiliate is 1%.
Yeah, so that's like a lot lower from
6%. A lot lower. Wow.
And merch is 4.5. So that's very similar to the 4% it used to be.
And I know if anyone goes through and adds that up, we're going to be a little bit short. That's because they're like little decimal places that I like, you know, I don't want to go like 10.3 and 1.2, you know, so it doesn't add up to 100.
Generally, though.
Generally, that's the percentages. And
that is interesting. I do think like because we started, I think the main things are we started streaming and we started the gaming channel and just like our videos get a significant amount more views, and it's interesting because like that does also raise the amount you can charge sponsors,
but not as much as you think. It doesn't scale linearly as your views grow.
Yeah,
you actually charge less per view.
Yeah, like you charge sponsors somewhat based on CPM, so like the cost of every 1,000 views you expect a video to get in the first 30 days, and you average out your past 10, taking out any like super high or super low performers.
Yeah.
And that kind of gives you how you charge your sponsors. But we were able to charge a much higher CPM when our videos were getting like 50,000 views to 100,000 views than we are now. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's okay. That's totally fine. But it's just an interesting observation. Yeah. Whereas AdSense, like, it isn't affected the same way.
Yeah. And AdSense has actually gone up because as...
like our AdSense CPM, not just the total amount, like the cost
as YouTube gets more data about us, our viewers, and everything like that, they can give better
targeted ads
for companies.
And more targeted stuff. Ads, they can charge more for. So yeah, so our AdSense has become significantly higher, and our sponsor percentage has become significantly lower.
And maybe they trust our video and our channel and our videos a little bit more.
I think another thing is, you know, it's been a year since we last looked at those numbers. We have a year's worth of additional videos pulling in AdSense. Because that's the other thing. Sponsorship is a one-time payment that you get for doing that video. Then it's done. AdSense is trickling in from your entire library of videos. I think that's probably one of the biggest things. Yeah. So, like, the more videos you have, the more AdSense you're getting kind of passively from all those past videos. It's interesting. Any one video, like, is not making much. But when you have 160, however many videos we have right now, it does add up more. So I think that's a big part of it, too.
Yes. So I think that, like, especially in the beginning, sponsors are super important.
It was literally the thing that let us quit our jobs.
Yeah. And as you grow, you can diversify. And, you know, Twitch is a good example of us moving into a brand new platform and creating a certain percentage of our income that just didn't exist before.
Yeah.
So we got a few questions about how much we charge from...
I kind of went into like the CPM. It does range, but that's typically how people do it. typically people are going to be in the, like, depending on how big you are, and again, the bigger you are, the lower CPM you're charging, but it's going to be, like, I don't know, 15 or 20 CPM up to, like, 45 CPM, and it's just...
Well, also, there's so much that goes into it.
And a lot of it also depends on, yeah, like,
your how industry much, and...
Your industry, how niche you are, because the more niche you are, like, if you are reviewing tumblers, and a tumbler company wants to pay you, they're like, they have a direct link to an audience interested in
Tumblr. Well, but also, certain niches have, you know, better or worse chances at getting higher or lower rates. So it depends so much. Also, I think that, like, how you know whether it's fair or not...
Is your audience an age that is purchasing
stuff? Yeah. You know? Yeah, and how you know if it's fair or not is you basically reach out to other content creators, you meet them, you kind of compare notes.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, with enough offers coming in, mm-hmm. you see what is off on the high end or the low end, and you know when it's like a really good deal for you yeah. or you know when you're getting ripped off. So it's just
time. So it's kind of hard to know
yeah.
in the beginning.
And there are some of those industry standard rates, like Caitlin was talking about with the CPM. But that even CPM, like
the rate I gave is so wide, so huge. And
so I'm wide,
people
yeah.
even outside of that.
Yeah, and it depends a lot on, like, you know, how good your audience is and also how cool that sponsor is. If that sponsor can go to anyone and say, like, here's a couple bucks, you know, do an ad, and they're like, oh my gosh, this cool company sponsored me. You know, it's like, how desirable is the ad to advertise? Also, that's why sometimes some of these companies that approach you that you're like, ah, I don't know, but they're offering you so much money, they have to offer that much money because no one wants to do deals with them. You know?
Sometimes. I mean, also, I think just like maybe they're offering, I think a lot more frequently is they're offering that much money because they want a lot more from you. They want a lot more control.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing too, is like our highest paying sponsors are also the ones that want more control, which is why those sponsors are much more rare for us, because like it's like it, you know, if their vision aligns with our vision and like they're cool with the things we want to do, then it's okay because they're not actually changing very much. But then some sponsors, if the idea they have is totally different than what we would want to do, or they would want a bunch of changes, then it's just not worth it and we won't do it. So those sponsors are super rare.
Yeah. I think, we got a question. How do you go about raising rates with reoccurring sponsors? We just keep track of all of our metrics, and we have spreadsheets, mm-hmm. and we have, like, you know, and we just do it just like any other business negotiation. It's like, look, we've grown this much. Our views have gone this much. The link tracker that you guys are using is like doing this. And, you know, then they negotiate back and forth. But, like, you know,
and most of the recurring ones we sign up for like 3 months at a time. Or 4 months at a time, or 6 months at a time, or a year at a time. So we're not going to, like, you know, obviously we're not renegotiating mid-contract. And sometimes if it's only been a few months, we won't. But, like, if it's been enough time that, like, our numbers have increased significantly, we will renegotiate.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're cool, and sometimes they're kind of pushed back, so.
Yeah. And that's another thing that affects price. Are they a one-off that's never going to come back again, or are they long-term? We're getting into the weeds. Wow. I wonder what people will think of this podcast.
These are their questions.
Speaking of interesting, exciting things, let's talk about tax from Elizabeth. Elizabeth Innes, being self-employed, how do you sort out your taxes? Does receiving sponsorships complicate how you file?
I mean, our taxes are complicated because we have a bunch of different income sources, and because we are self-employed, working with sponsors does not... that in itself is not a complication.
No, I mean, you file your W-9, they send you your 1099, you collect them all and what have you. I think the thing that's most complicated about being, like, you know, content creation is if you are selling your own merch, state sales
physical
tax.
Physical products. Are where it gets complicated.
That's so complicated.
So we're not going to get into the weeds about that because that has nothing to do with sponsorships. But sponsorships don't... complicated anything any more than anything else.
I think we got through all of the collections, the questions that we collected. Like, these are the most common or upvoted questions that we collected. Yeah. There probably were a lot more.
Yeah, there's a lot more, but it's been an hour and 8 minutes. So shall we move on to Thing of the Week? Yes.
I was going to ask, do you have any, like, closing thoughts on sponsors?
Oh, no. No, I mean, I don't know. I feel like we talked a lot about it.
Yeah, we did talk about
it. Do you have any closing thoughts before we talk about our Thing of the Week? I'm not going to play the Thing of the Week music again, but we can.
I think I'm very proud of us for the path that we walk, trying to create fun ads for our audience, trying to create honest and positive, you know, experiences for the brands that we work for. And also, we often have a lot of fun making our own ads.
We writing actually them, do. Like, I love them, doing funny it. Skits.
Yeah.
And, like, dressing up. Like, there was one recently where, like, I was in, like, full conspiracy theory mode with, like, a disheveled robe and stuff. Or, like, anytime we do, like, the alien costumes.
I think, like, honestly, I really like that. The ads have what's been... Those are the trigger that got us into doing skits and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm just in closing, I'm going to say I'm proud of us for navigating this tricky road. I feel like we're doing a pretty good job.
I feel like we've developed a fun style, like a fun way of doing sponsorships.
Yeah. Just want to, like, acknowledge a win.
Okay. Good win, baby. We do get a lot of comments saying, like, oh, your ads are the only ones that I don't skip. And, like, people... Yeah. Mentioning funny moments from the ad specifically. So I feel like that's a win.
And just, I hope you guys know that we don't take you guys and your eyeballs for granted. We put a lot of thought and time into what sponsors we choose, how we do the ad, and all of that jazz.
It's, and, like, a way to make each one uniquely funny in some way. Yeah.
It's a long time. It's a lot.
It is a lot of work. We'd have a lot more hours in the week if we didn't do sponsorships.
Hope it shows that we care. And now it is time for Thing of the Week.
I'm not going to play the music again, though. Oh, we already played. We already paused for it.
Okay, my Thing of the Week is the thing that I've had in my hands for the whole podcast. It's so cute, and it's, the weight of it feels good. What is this? This is a terabyte hard drive, and so you can get something of the same size, the 2 terabytes.
Do you want to say the size of it?
For those of you guys who can't see it, it's the size of my nose.
That's a very interesting comparison. Yeah, it's about, like, 2.5 inches by an inch.
Yeah, it's tiny. It's tiny. It's aluminum. It's USB-C. You just plug that in. Boom. And
what is, like, the brand or the type? Because I know we'll always have a link to the Thing of the Week, but it might help.
It's Sabrient, and it's their Rocket Nano.
Hashtag not sponsored.
And I've only used it for a short amount of time, but it's nice just having this in my bag. It's nice having a terabyte hard drive. It's like, is this a hard drive or is this like a big flash drive? I don't know. What's the difference anymore? It's so tiny. I remember when, like, a terabyte used to be like...
Such.
And it's like a gigabyte a second. I'm just nerding out, and I think that, like, I'm, like, showing my age or something like that, like, being like, oh my gosh, USB-C, USB-C, you can plug it both ways, how convenient, and that powers it, and there's data. Remember when there used to be 2 cables, one for power, one for data? Back in my day, terabyte hard drives used to carry in a backpack.
Well, it's funny, I was going to bring up baby backpack, but, like, one thing you guys might have gathered from Evan over all of his recommendations or just seeing his technology pop up here and there in videos.
I love tiny things.
Evan loves tiny things. You got 2 baby computers. You got this baby terabyte. You got baby backpack. You have all these little things, and you love having your, like, technology go bag and stuff.
I love having, like, everything I need for, like, various things with me in like, a little grab bag. It's so cool. Update on the GPD Win Max.
Which doing was really your, well. That's my, your that's gaming my, baby computer.
That's my gaming baby computer.
Yeah. That was your Thing of the Week last time, right?
Yeah. I should do a technology review channel.
We have enough channels. Okay. My Thing of the Week is a movie we watched. Yes, we watched a movie, everyone. Yes. We did. It was called Mary and the Witch's Flower. It's an anime movie.
It's great.
And so a bunch of the people from Studio Ghibli, which is, like...
Which shut down, which is sad.
Which shut down, which is very sad, but, you know, made a huge amount of amazing movies. It's, like, Spirited Away and Totoro and, like, a bunch of amazing anime movies.
Howl's Moving Castle.
Howl's Moving Castle. Ugh. Like, a bunch of the classics. A lot of the people from that studio reformed into a new studio. The name of it is, like, escaping me right now, but their first full-length movie they've put out is Mary and the Witch's Flower. And it's totally, like...
The vibes.
The vibes are so good, so feel good. And the story is kind of like if you cross a little bit of Harry Potter with a little bit of Spirited Away. And it's very fantastical. And it's just great. There's Oh my gosh, there's two cats in there, two cat characters, and one of them is a little black cat named Tib. Tib is Jube. Like, I love Tib's attitude. He was my favorite character, even though he never spoke, because he is a cat, but just, like, the expressions. I was just, like, standing for Tib the whole time.
It's so interesting. I was reading one review, and they're like, you know, there's too many things that, like, seem like they're pulled straight from other Ghibli movies. Like, they should have done something new. And I'm like, no, I like that. They had lots of, like, little callbacks, little, like, it was almost like little Easter eggs of, like, similar, like, I don't know. I felt very, like, at home.
Like, I felt like I was still in the Ghibli universe,
I want more of that.
Yeah.
Do more, like, it was, like, more of the same thing in a good way. I just want more.
Yeah.
Take your time. I know that those videos take a long time, but please make more.
You're speaking directly to the studio now?
Yes.
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 Anyway, so as always, we will have links to both of our Thing of the Weeks in the description.
Yeah, wow. That I'm surprised, honestly, that we fit all of that into a single podcast. I am too.
It was dense. It was a lot.
It was dense.
I hope it was interesting to you guys.
We tried to spill as much tea as we could without breaking any NDAs.
I thought we were spilling beans.
Oh, yeah. We spilled the beans.
Without breaking any NDAs or getting too specific.
Yeah. Bye. No, wait. Before you go. You need to prank everyone. So leave us reviews. Wherever you can leave reviews for the podcast, because we want this to go to number one in a chart. I think we're in the leisure category, Caitlin. Should we be in the leisure?
I don't know.
It's
hard to categorize a podcast.
YouTubers we're like, we just talk about ourselves stuff. And stuff.
Yeah. What's the talking about ourselves category?
Anyways, like, get us in the rank so we can confuse people. Yeah, that's the idea.
Because if people don't already know our channel and they see our podcast in the ranks, they're going to be very confused about why these two people have a podcast and why they're talking about random stuff. So yeah, that's the prank, just to explain it. You know, it's a good prank when you have to explain it.
Yes. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.